This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
What does it mean when he's the first president, Austin, that used your part of his economic advisory council, the first president in the history of the country? Well, he accumulated more debt than 43 other people before him, but that never reached 3% GDP in a year. First president ever.
What does it mean? It means we had very low inflation and we had low population growth is what it means.
So poor Barack Obama, 43 other presidents have a better track record than him, and it's not his fault?
They do not have a better track record. Since 2010,
they had better GDP than him.
Since 2010, we've added 15 million jobs. Do you think Donald Trump is going to beat that number?
I do, yes.
Yeah, actually, I do. But why do you always split off the years? When I look at the Reagan years,
because we were in a massive recession in 2009.
The Obama years are 2008 to 2016. We have the lowest labor participation rate.
Just a repatriation.
You desperately want to put that stinking mess of a financial crisis that happened before he ever got there. You want to put that on his ledger, and you know you can't do
that. Oh, okay. So I'll only start when things were a little bit better. We'll only count the good years, and we'll just.
So what about the last 2 years? Though, just ask Austin about the last.
You ask.
Okay, last 2 years.
Austin, what about the last
2 years? 5 million jobs.
The first president in history, though, that hasn't had a 3% GDP print in any quarter of his presidency. So let's forget about 2008 to 2011. What about the last 5 years?
Okay. Here's the problem. You factor in jobs and you give out these phony numbers, Austin, that mislead
people. That's not a phony number. Just look at the number.
You don't add the number of people that are out of the labor force, that are looking for work, that can't find work in the long term. Why do you forget them?
I do add that. I do.
No, you don't add that, because we didn't create 5 million jobs in the last year.
The labor force. I have said that's the weakest part of the labor force. That has improved in the last 2 years.
Austin, Merry Christmas, and you owe me a dinner.
Oh, there you go. Austin Goolsbee and only Sean Hannity chewing it out. We've talked about this, repeatedly. And, Scott, you remember Dave Stockman when he came on? He shocked people. He just laid it out very simply. And he just said, Bill, there's not been one net breadwinning job since the year 2000. So not only under Barack Obama, but we're going back as far back as George W. Bush here in saying 2000, one net breadwinning job. I mean, we create a lot of these, fast food jobs and, minimum wage type of jobs. But what have we lost in the process? I mean, it's the same kind of thinking that's happened in the state of California. Governor Brown wants to convince everybody, we've created all these new jobs. But what about all the jobs you've chased away? You're not even at break even net. Of all the jobs and businesses that you've chased away, but yet you're lauding, some sort of, kind of a windmill type of, business growth and, employment number. And let's face it, the numbers, the employment, and people just laugh at this stuff anymore because you look around, you see your neighbors who are out of work or they're working under the table, to survive. And again, I understand, when it's a survival mode and you feel like, look at your own government's not helping you. So if they're not helping you, you got to help yourself. You got to do what it takes because, last time I checked, our family still want to eat. And, if the jobs aren't there and we've got to, work the angle and this is what's happening, and we're not even talking about how many millions of the labor force are working under the table, not paying taxes. Yes, they're paying taxes when they buy something, but they're not paying taxes. There's no skin in the game with everything else in the bigger play of things. And the challenge that we're going to have is repatriating these people.
And I can tell you the place where you could find them that more than anywhere. And it's American citizens that are working for cash. It's your construction industry.
Yeah.
Your people building your homes, doing your drywall. A lot of those guys are doing it for cash.
Well, and in a sense, do you blame them? I mean, I have compassion. Been there, done that. I know the program. You're trying to survive, trying to keep food on your family's table. And I appreciate that. But this is a problem that we're going to have to deal with sooner or later. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 5 minutes after the top of the hour.
This is a healthcare alert from the Pain Relief Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You don't have to suffer any longer. You can immediately qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you by calling our 24/7 Pain Relief Hotline at 866-389-0620. Delivery is free and all paperwork is handled for you. If you are on Medicare and have knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain, don't wait. You can qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost by calling our 24/7 pain hotline now at 866-389-0620. Our representatives are standing by 24/7 to take your call and rush you your pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you. Shipping is free and all paperwork is handled for you. Just call 866-389-0620. That's 866-389-0620. Again, 866-389-0620.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. Okay, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. We've got a plethora of information, past interviews, things you want to share with your friends, your neighbors, you know, things that we have there, you know, our sponsors. We appreciate their involvement with the show. This would what makes the world go round and helps us continuing to keep the good message out to you to pursue the truth no matter where it leads. That's our commitment to you. I think, you know, we've got choices to make. Let's make them based on the facts and the truth. You know, get out of this this arena of opinion and theoretical concepts. I mean, it's been a disaster, admittedly, the last 8 years, because I think we've been operating more on theory than empirical evidence, hey, another discussion for another day. Why not? Leo Barron is with us right now, an instructor of military intelligence officers for the U.S. Army, holds an undergraduate and graduate degree in history, combat veteran, author of several military history books, and his articles have appeared in World War II History Magazine, World War II Magazine, and other history-related periodicals. His latest book is High Tide in the Korean War, How an Outnumbered American Regiment Defeated the Chinese. Leo Barron, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show, Bill.
Hey, I appreciate it. I love history. You know, first of all, right off the bat, thank you for your service. My brother was in the Army. I was in the Marine Corps. My older brother was in the Air Force career. My father was at the Battle of the Bulge with Patton during World War II. So we honor and appreciate those who have served our country, and I thank you for that, Leo.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. Speaking for veterans, we all appreciate the thanks that the great American citizens have shown us. And honestly, I don't really think of it as much of a big deal. It's just something I did, and it was just, you know, a job that I had to do, just like the guys who went over in World War II in Korea. It was just a job they had to do.
Right, exactly. And that is the sentiment, you know, what you share there. I think what's happening a little bit is we're trying to, as a society, because of what happened in Vietnam, how our veterans came back, and they were so mistreated because of the sentiment of what happened in Southeast Asia. It was very disturbing. And I think that America is trying to, you know, still make up for that. And in doing so, we acknowledge again and reaffirm our appreciation for those who have put skin in the game. I mean, Leo, right now, as you know, it's probably less than 1% of American citizens are involved in the military, have put in, you know, skin in the game, whether it's at a career level or a couple of years of volunteer service and that sort of thing. I think that is something that needs to be addressed down the road. I believe as a citizen, part of our rite of passage is to serve our country. In whatever level, if you can do it in the military, but there are things you can do and say, look at, you know, I am an activated citizen. I have invested my own personal time into the furtherance of this, great democracy.
Totally, my opinion.
My humble opinion, anyway. I want to talk to you about the topic here, No Silent Night, the Christmas battle for Baston.
Okay. Right. Yeah, and, you know, it was something. First, I want to do a shout-out to my co-author, Don Seigen, who helped me write the No Silent Night. And it was, you know, he was also pretty instrumental in writing that book. It was a topic that we both had gotten interested in, just because of the setting. It was Christmas. You know, most of the world is celebrating Christmas, and here were these soldiers in miserable weather conditions, you know, fighting for their lives, you know, to win this battle and ultimately to win the war in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty compelling story. That's what got us to get us interested in that, you know, and bring that story, to the greater audience.
Now, how did you come together, the two of you, that, I mean, one day you're having a casual conversation and you realize you both are interested in this and you say, hey, let's work together. How did this come about?
Well, I had written some articles in World War II magazine and about the subject. And Don was, you know, approaching the subject from his own end. He then reached out to me and vis-a-vis email. And then eventually we just figured out we had a great story. If we put our minds together, you know, two heads are better than one. Mm-hmm. He had some research that he had done. I had some research that I had done. And so that's how we kind of came together. And ultimately, that's how we put the book together. He had some great interviews from some veterans. I had some interviews and some research from the records from the National Archives. And that's how we ended up writing the story.
What is it that we don't know about No Silent Night?
Well, you know, it's funny because in the grand scheme of things, it was, you know, not a huge battle. It was just a facet of a much larger battle. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those kind of things where, you know, people, they hear the story of Bastogne, they immediately think of the famous ultimatum that the German commanders had given to General McAuliffe and, of course, his famous response of nuts. But there was actually a lot of fighting to make sure that the Germans weren't able to take the city. And really the ultimate effort that they pushed was on December 25th, on Christmas morning. That was really the last roll of the dice to take the town with any kind of impact on the greater battle of the Bulge. And so the Germans had basically cobbled together some additional forces, brought in some reinforcements, and on Christmas morning they attacked Bastogne from the northwest side of the perimeter, and the Americans were waiting for them. The paratroopers were waiting for them. You had the glidermen of the 401st, as well as the paratroopers from the 502nd Parachute Infantry Regiment, as well as, you know, the unsung heroes, the 705th Tank Destroyer Battalion, which had been attached to the 101st. And together, those soldiers, plus the soldiers from the 463rd Parachute Field Artillery Battalion, stopped the final German attack cold in its tracks on Christmas morning. In reality, the battle only lasted several hours.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, that was pretty much it. The Germans weren't going to be able to take Bastogne before Patton reached the town the next day.
Well, Leo, wasn't this a bit of a Christmas miracle? I mean, you know, you consider the odds against the Allied forces at that point. I mean, the situation was dire.
It was initially, yes. When the Germans kicked off the attack on December 16th, and started the Battle of the Bulge, you had roughly anywhere from like 20 to 22 divisions going up against really only about four American divisions in the Ardennes region. So you're talking the Germans were throwing a quarter of a million men, as well as close to 1,000 armored vehicles and tanks,
mm-hmm.
really only up against about maybe 80,000 American soldiers. And initially, they were able to punch through the American lines, though it was a lot harder than they expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a race going on. And, you know, for the Germans, they looked at Bastogne, which was a important road hub, and it was a race to get to that, you know, that town. Thankfully, some units held up the Germans, mainly from the 28th Infantry Division, which allowed the 101st to get there and beat the Germans to Bastogne. And then, of course, it became a siege at that point.
What a great story. And I want to pick it up from there if we will, if we can, when we come back, Leo Baron. Silent Night, the Christmas battle for Bastogne. Our conversation with one of the authors, Leo Baron, continues here on Bill Martinez Live. What are your thoughts? Okay, let us know. at B. Martinez Live right now. It is 15 after the top of the hour.
Did you know your car can be hacked just like your computer or phone? Hackers can hijack the signal of your own key fob to burglarize your vehicle in seconds. The Black Hole Faraday Key Fob Bag is a signal impenetrable shield that stops these hacks in their tracks. Protect one of your most valuable assets. Go to hackproofbag.com. That's hackproofbag.com. And use promo code RADIO to get 20% off. Or call 805-222-4584. 805-222-4584.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-615-7709. That's 800-615-7709. 800-615-7709.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now, and as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com.
100% grass-fed beef for your health. When comparing to commercial raised, they offer more good fats while cutting the bad. Antioxidant-rich, including vitamin E and C, plus beta-carotene. Free of added hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all of your fresh, non-cooked products, the only ingredient is 100% grass-fed beef. Go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to receive 30% off your order. Go to MidasResources.com or find us on Facebook.
This is a life-changing message for anyone with sleep apnea who is on the go and tired of dragging around a big, bulky home CPAP device. Now there's finally a portable device that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. You can even add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. It's the Transcend Mini CPAP, and if you're one of the first 100 callers, you can try Transcend risk-free for 10 days. So call now, 1-800-441-9833. Transcend is the world's first portable mini CPAP device. It gives you the freedom to sleep in total comfort anywhere you are. Our smallest and most advanced portable design ever, Transcend is so small and so light, you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. To guarantee your 10-day in-home trial, you must be one of the first 100 callers to call minicpap.com now. 1-800-441-9833. Again, that's 1-800-441-9833.
If you or someone you care about loves outdoor adventure, then check out slingbow.com for some unique holiday gift ideas. That's slingbow.com, where we have some innovative new products for the archer, hunter, or bow fishing enthusiast in your family. Now through January, use the promo code HOLIDAY to get free shipping in the U.S. or Canada. And from all of us at Slingbow Industries, have a safe, joyous, and peaceful holiday season.
Getting America back on track.
And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid, and the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people.
Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're back with you, America, 19 minutes after the top of the hour. I'm Bill Martinez. Leo Barron is with us, an instructor of military intelligence officers for the U.S. Army, holds undergraduate and graduate degrees in history. He is a combat veteran. You know, when you think about combat veterans of all the citizens here in the country, I mean, we already consider that probably about 1% of that, and maybe we're being generous, 1% of America today is involved in the military. But when you think about combat, I mean, we're talking a fraction of a percent of its citizens who've actually been in combat action. Leo, we really respect, you know, what you have done on behalf of this country in putting your life on the line. I know you, as most combat veterans say, that it's just, hey, it was my job, is what I did. I mean, no big whoop, but you know, I look at it from a standpoint of that you are uniquely qualified to talk about combat because you've been there and done that. And it's more than just a saying. I mean, this is pretty visceral, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I do talk to the veterans, when I interview the veterans, I always tell them, especially if it's the Korean War or the World War II veterans, I always tell them, I said, what you guys went through was a lot worse than what I ever saw. You know, the weather conditions, the type of enemy they faced. And they always kind of laugh and they kind of turn it back on me, and they said, well, no, at least the guys we fought had uniforms. And I'm like, well, that's true.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a little bit easier to tell the good guys from the bad guys back then.
Yeah. And they're also very humble. To them, it really was just, hey, this is what our job. We have to go, you know, our country's called us to serve, and we have to go off and fight, and we're going to do the job and finish the job, and hopefully we can get home safe and sound to our families. And they were always very, very humble. Some obviously were reluctant to tell their story, and I do think that being a veteran did kind of help them because they were like, hey, you kind of understand some of the issues. But they were always a, you know, great bunch of guys, loved talking to them, and it was a real great experience interviewing them.
Yeah, once you open them up, I mean, it is quite revealing, but it does take some time. I can tell you, you know, I mentioned my dad, a World War II vet. He was a medic and was in the European theater and happened to be at the Battle of the Bulge with General Patton. And my dad, I mean, he never spoke. And what opened him up was my brother, who was in Vietnam, and he was a field radio operator. So he was on the front lines, and that's what opened my dad up to talk about it, was that because of what my brother had went through in Vietnam. And, you know, so we got an opportunity to hear the story. And, of course, you know, today we have World War II veterans that are dying every day. We have less and less here, as we do with our Korean veterans as well. And so it is an honored opportunity to be able to speak with them. And, in fact, here recently I lost a dear friend and mentor. He was 92 years old. And I thought in part it was fitting that of all days of the year he would pass on Pearl Harbor Day, and he passed 92 years. And I mean, a month before he was playing tennis, you know, but it was so go figure. But you know, quite a mentor, and a lot that he shared with me will be with me. His legacy will continue because of the things that he shared with me. But he was quite the character. Well, our conversation about No Silent Night, the book that you and Don Sagan wrote, The Christmas Battle for Bastogne, and as we were laying this out before, you know, you talk about elements and the weather. I mean, you know, what, you know, our military men endured during that period of time, it was incredible. I mean, you got odds. They're overwhelmed in terms of numbers by the Nazi forces. You got weather, you know, just for fun, why not? And here you are, you know, you find yourself on Christmas Day of all days, you're battling for your very life.
Yeah, and it was, like I said, it was cold. There are some interesting stories where when the weapons would freeze up, in one particular case, when a 30 caliber machine gun would freeze up, one of the ways you would basically thaw the weapon was the soldiers would urinate on it, and that was how they would actually thaw the ice off the weapon. And it was a technique. It worked. Soldiers were, you know, the American soldiers were learning pretty fast how to, you know, to deal with the elements. Ironically, the German soldiers, especially the ones from the 26th Volksgrenadier, had fought on the Russian front. And so they were actually very they're very used to that kind of weather. They're they had acclimated themselves to that weather. They had the right, a lot of them had some of the right equipment for it. And so it wasn't as much of an issue, for them, as it was, you know, for the American soldiers, especially since the 101st had literally left, on the 18th of December. They were on, they were basically refitting in Mormelon, France, and they were basically thrown onto trucks with what they had on them and sent off to Belgium. And so a lot of these guys didn't have necessarily the proper equipment, the proper boots, the proper winter clothing. And so, yeah, you can imagine how things like trench foot and frostbite were a real issue for the soldiers, you know, in the trenches. So, yeah, well, the weather definitely was an issue for the paratroopers there.
Well, Leo, why was Bastogne so significant?
You know, it's all you got to do is look at a map. You can look at a map and you can see there are a whole bunch of roads that intersect that go through Bastogne. In fact, there are seven. And it's the Ardennes is a heavily wooded region. And so everything has to travel on roads, especially now in today's, you know, mechanized warfare. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to be able to navigate the Ardennes, you got to hold the roads and especially those hubs where all those roads intersect. So in that sense, it's a lot like, you know, what Gettysburg was in the Civil War. Like I said, you can look at a map and you almost immediately can recognize the importance of the town.
Right.
And the Germans knew it was important. They had plans for it, and they wanted to basically capture the town on the cheap, so to speak. They wanted to get the town before the Americans could rush defenders into the area. And as, of course, like I said before, they didn't win that race. They lost that race. And as a result, they then made the decision, well, maybe we'll just bypass it. And you know, basically surround the town and hopefully it will kind of wither on the vine, so to speak. And of course, we know that that's not what happened. And as a result, it was very hard for the German units that had passed the town and were heading towards the Meuse River to get, you know, resupply and reinforcements because they had to go travel a much longer distance because the Americans still held, the road hub at Bastogne. So that's why it was so important.
Right. Well, Leo, you know, we talk about no silent night, you know, for the soldiers here and the odds that were against them. And I look at this as a Christmas miracle. And prior to that, you know, you've got General Patton, you know, turning to God. He wanted the divine hand of God to be involved. And he asked the chaplain. And has a little, he writes up a prayer and shares it with the troops, right?
Yeah, that was, the chaplain's name was, James O'Neill. He was a Catholic, priest.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the chaplain for, Third Army. And ironically, the prayer itself had been written several weeks prior. It had been written right around December the 8th. Because the bad weather actually had been going on for a while. And Patton had brought Monsignor O'Neill into his office and basically said to him, like, hey, this bad weather, it's grounding our aircraft, which was huge because we, at the time, the Allies had air supremacy. And one of the reasons why we were so effective at winning battles was because we could basically hammer the Germans into dust with our air power. But because of the bad weather, that wasn't going on. And so he had asked Monsignor O'Neill to write a prayer. And this, like I said, this was actually before the Battle of the Bulge. But then when the prayer actually came out, you know, because you had to basically print it out, issue it out, it didn't actually get down to the soldiers until about December the 14th. So it was about a day or two before the Battle of the Bulge had actually kicked off.
Mm.
But prayer was important to Patton. And he made a mention of that to Monsignor O'Neill that, you know, we needed to pray that, yes, preparation is important, training is important, but we need prayer. And we need luck, and that's kind of the part that prayer played a role. And he had made a very important note to Monsignor O'Neill about the importance of prayer for the soldier as well as for victory. And so he actually, and when he had seen Monsignor O'Neill again in January, he basically kind of laughed and said, hey, your prayers worked, the weather did clear up, which it did.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Leo, we're out of time, and I want to thank you for the book. No Silent Night, The Christmas Battle for Bastogne. Leo Barron, along with co-author Don Seigan on Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
This report is brought to you by Jive Software. Technology has come a long way in 30 years. When Marty McFly stepped out of his time machine in Back to the Future 2, things like video conferencing, hoverboards, and personal drones were viewed as futuristic fantasies. John Schneider of Jive Software explains.
Artificial intelligence in the workplace isn't science fiction anymore. It's a reality, and we foresee some big AI trends in 2017. Machine learning will only get better at combing through the projected 44 zettabytes of data in the digital universe in order to make relevant recommendations. Predictive analytics will also play a vital role in decision-making, allowing executives more time to focus on strategy and innovation.
John says there are additional trends to watch for. The Internet of Things is going mainstream, with real-time data seamlessly integrating into collaboration hubs. Work graphs are set to become increasingly intuitive, enabling information and insights to be more visible. Finally, voice-first and virtual reality will infiltrate the enterprise workplace, making it more interactive and productive. For more, visit jivesoftware.com.
Paycon Attorney Spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention heartburn drug users. If you or a loved one has taken Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, and suffered serious kidney damage, chronic kidney disease, or kidney failure, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Studies from the JAMA Internal Medicine indicate a significant increased risk of acute and chronic kidney disease from taking proton pump inhibitors. If you or a loved one was diagnosed with kidney failure or chronic kidney disease after taking Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk now. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Call 800-225-8944. That's 800-225-8944. Again, 800-225-8944. Call now.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and negative articles can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. It happens a lot, and it's just not fair. But what can you do? ReputationDefender.com can help protect your good name. Get a free consultation now. Call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system, and the analysis is absolutely free. Make the best things about you jump out in searches. Protect your personal and professional reputation, your business, and your income. Get your free reputation analysis from ReputationDefender.com right now. Call 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com today.
We the people.
You see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Listen to Bill Martinez live.
Well, welcome back, America. 28 minutes before the top of the hour, I'm Bill Martinez. Let us know your thoughts at B Martinez Live. Get involved in the conversation. Why not? Hey, with us right now, we've got a real special treat. Kevin Starr is with us, acclaimed author of The American and the California Dream series, and he's back with a new release that is the first of its kind, Continental Ambitions, Roman Catholics in North America, The Colonial Experience. Tells for the first time in a single volume the fascinating story of three Roman Catholic civilizations. We got Spain, we got France, and the recusant England, who said, "You're not the boss of me." They just stubbornly were set in their ways, and they figure, hey, they were going to be the masters of their own ship. And here it is, these three civilizations, Spain, France, and England, exploring, evangelizing, and settling the North American continent. Kevin Starr, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Great to be here, Bill. Thank you.
Well, good to have you with us to tell us the story of, you know, the colonization of North America from these three civilizations.
Well, Bill, I did my PhD almost a half century ago at Harvard, and we got a tremendous exposure to the great Puritan and colonial Puritan Protestant founders of New England. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the more I've investigated, the more I studied, the more I realized that the first projection of European culture, European civilization, the first encounter with the Native Americans and European civilization came from these Catholic powers who were there really in the case of Spain. Spain was going into Florida in the 1520s. My goodness, that's a good 80 plus years, almost 90 years before Jamestown.
Mm-hmm.
And so it dawned on me that the first layer of encounter between Euro-America and indigenous America and the North American continent was from Catholic countries, and that has not been emphasized. First of all, Catholics themselves see themselves as immigrants. Well, we're immigrants that came from the Irish famine in the 1820s and 30s, or were immigrants who came up from Mexico.
Mexico, exactly.
The Spanish Southwest. Mm-hmm. But the point is that is not the case. That we were here, I say we, meaning Roman Catholic cultures, were here from the beginning, and that has to be really paid attention to, first of all, by Catholics in this country, but secondly, also of American culture, that we were indeed founded by Spain, France, and England.
Mm-hmm. And this certainly affected the worldview that they held at this point. Though we hear, a portion of the founding perspective of immigrants leaving Europe to escape religious persecution, but there's more to the story.
There certainly is more to the story. And, of course, the story begins with Spain, with Christopher Columbus in 1492, and we all learned that as school children. But there's a very powerful thing at work there. When Columbus came back from his first voyage, he brought some slaves. He had enslaved some Native American peoples and brought them back to England, to Spain. And he got bawled out by Queen Isabella. Of course, Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand sponsored his exploration.
Right.
And Queen Isabella said to Columbus, in effect, I sent you up there to evangelize these people, to help make an encounter between these two cultures, not to enslave them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I trace Spain, the dialectic between wanting to get ahead, wanting to exploit the mining resources of the Caribbean, and the appropriation of Native American labor, which resulted in very devastating effects on the Native Americans of the Caribbean. They weren't used to working that hard. And then the rise of people like Bartolomeo Las Casas or Fray Molinos, who stood up for the Native Americans and said, listen, these are rational people, and we have to treat them in a rational way as befits their dignity. So there's a real battle in the Spanish psyche. And, of course, eventually the creation of an extraordinary new world culture from the amalgamation of Spain and the indigenous people. So the story ends. The story has very tragic dimensions to it initially, but it ends with a sort of triumphant presence of a new kind of Hispanic people in the new world.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, you've extricated them. You've gotten the people from the Americas. You bring them in. You brought them into this situation of slavery. And interesting how it has taken it's gone through its course. But there's just something about our own humanity that just lures us into the greed, into pillaging civilizations. And here you have the leadership of Spain saying, look, we want to build relationship with this new civilization. We want to enslave them.
Well, that's a real tension in the early phases of Hispanic culture. Now, of course, in Continental Ambitions, I also talk about the great lure of the continent, the great lure of the North American continent. And that was always in the Spanish mind. For instance, when the explorers like Ugarte went into New Mexico, they signed agreements. Well, I'll have rights on any Pacific port. In other words, they thought the Pacific Ocean came back down into New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They were always pushing to get to the Pacific.
Yes.
Because by 1565, Mexico was in contact by sea power with the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this also hold of the Asia Pacific. Spanish imagination, and I chronicle that in Continental Ambitions because it accounts for remarkable feats of exploration and settlement on the part of Hispanic people.
Well, what did they know about the continent? I mean, obviously, if they're thinking they're, you know, they're in New Mexico and they, you know, they're next to the Pacific, there was a lot more for them to discover, but yet they realized there was potential there in North America in terms of resources.
Oh, they certainly did. They certainly did. Look at Santa Fe, New Mexico being settled as early as 1610. They were there very early. That's just 3 years after Jamestown. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of California, that was a delay. Spain didn't get into California, Alta California, until 1769. It began to settle in a very peaceful way in Texas, with the Native Americans in Texas. And that's a really, I've got a whole chapter in Continental Ambitions on Texas, because it's an example of very strong indigenous peoples, Native American peoples, meeting very strong Spanish presence, and the two of them working out agreements, working out arrangements, and putting together the first phases of Texas. In the case of New Mexico, it was a little more difficult because of a massacre that was accidentally launched, but it was certainly fulfilled at Acoma. It shocked the new Spanish government in Mexico City. They had hearings on it. I go through the proceedings there. Then you had the great revolt of the Pueblo Native Americans in the 1680s. But eventually you have the creation of the New Mexican people. Mm-hmm. And I look in Continental Ambitions, I look at the art of New Mexico, the Santoses, the architecture, the fusion of Native American and Hispanic themes, showing a new people. In fact, by the time the United States acquires New Mexico in the Mexican War of 1846, you've got some 60 to 80,000 people who constitute a new race on the planet, the New Mexicans.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, when you think about how they, in a sense, homogenized these two ethnicities into this.
Yeah, and it's very important to pay attention to, Bill, as I do, too, that the creation of this new race over a century period was through legitimate, it was not through sexual exploitation, it was through legitimate, stabilized marriages, Christian-Catholic marriages, this new people. In other words, this new people came in honorably into the world, not just casually. In the first phases of it, there was a lot of miscegenation, a lot of sexual exploitation, but as time went on, the churches, the Roman Catholic Church influence was in favor of stable marriages. In the case of France, the French had a remarkably sophisticated way of dealing with the Native Americans.
Okay, well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break. We got to go to break now. Dr. Kevin Starr is with us, author of Continental Ambitions, Roman Catholics in North America, The Colonial Experience. More on Bill Martinez Live 18 before the top of the hour right now.
Attention, this is a public notice from Citizens Disability. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right if you suffer from physical and mental disability. Whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, Citizens Disability can help. You'll be given an advocate who will evaluate your situation, handle your application, and deal with Social Security. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. We only get paid if you win your case. There are a number of conditions that can make you eligible for disability benefits, many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call Citizens Disability today to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-989-1396. 800-989-1396. 800-989-1396. That's 800-989-1396. 1396.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website, powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-765-1480 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-765-1480.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
This is Dan Billett. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Are you one of the 70% of Americans that want to own your own business, afraid to leave the security of your current job to pursue your dreams? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and myself want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current job schedule, creating extra income for you and your family by joining his crusade, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com.
Is there a stock market bubble in the making?
You need an early warning system for your investments because you work too hard to be surprised by your money. Now, guarding your wealth has never been easier. Introducing WealthGuard from OnTheMarkMoney.com, an early warning system that tracks all your accounts. WealthGuard lets you know in advance if your accounts are dropping. It works for all accounts, whether you work with us or not. Get WealthGuard today, 100% free. Go to OnTheMarkMoney.com. That's OnTheMarkMoney.com.
We the people.
Our family would get together on Christmas, and like the week before Christmas Day, we'd bake cookies and we'd pack them and we'd write a letter saying, you know, why we celebrated Christmas, and we'd go around and knock door to door and give cookies to our neighbors.
Well, our parents always made us go to bed by midnight, but then, of course, they always woke us up at 2 o'clock in the morning to start opening Christmas presents, so we only got a few hours sleep. There were 5 of us in our family. It would take like 6 hours for us to open our presents on Christmas morning.
Listen to Bill Martinez live.
Hey, thanks for joining in, America 14. Before the top of the hour, a conversation with Dr. Kevin Starr continues. Dr. Starr's had an incredible past, and he probably would be the first to tell you he's been blessed in so many ways. After graduating in California at the University of San Francisco, he went on to serve our country in the military as a lieutenant, a tank battalion in Germany. And upon release from the service, entered Harvard University, where he earned his master's in 65, a PhD in 69 in American Lit. He has been teaching at just about all the top universities you can think of, from Berkeley to Davis, Riverside, Santa Clara, University of San Francisco, Stanford. Served as a California State Librarian from 94 to April the 1st, 2004, when Governor Schwarzenegger named him State Librarian Emeritus. Author of an ongoing multi-volume history of California, collectively entitled Americans and the California Dream, the first volume in the series. Here we are. We're honored to have him with us to talk about his latest book is The Continental Ambitions, Roman Catholics in North America, the Colonial Experience, to help us understand because, you know, Dr. Starr, we have heard so many different theories and, you know, history documented the way you have done this really brings a more total picture and aspect of the colonial experience and what happened in North America with these three civilizations, as you mentioned, Roman Catholic civilizations, the Roman Catholic influence clearly between Spain, France, and England, and how they explored, evangelized, and settled the North American continent. And right before we went to break, you were just starting to get into France's involvement and, you know, what they did to settle the Americas and do it in a way that, you know, contributed positively.
Well, the French, Bill, French had a challenge. you can't have a civilization without men and women. And we, of course, write history today from our current perspective. And I do a lot of work in this area to show that with the heroic women who came and how they came. Mm-hmm. For instance, in the case of France, if you were the daughter of a farmer, and you were the second or third daughter and you didn't have a dowry, you'd have to live a kind of Cinderella life at home working for your sisters. Mm-hmm. Well, the King of France, Louis XIV, and his Colbert, his minister, and Tédon said to some 3,000 young French women, listen, instead of staying home and being Cinderella, come to New France, come to Canada, we'll pay your dowry, we will pay your way over there, and of course you have to have a certificate of good behavior from your parish priest, mm-hmm. and if you happen to find a nice French gentleman whom you want to marry, we'll buy you a farm on the St. Lawrence River. Well, my goodness, within 100 years you have some 150,000 people, French Canadians, a whole sort of brand new world people.
Wow. Wow, what an answer. That's great.
Yes, and I pay attention to the Hispanic women who initially come up, especially in the late 18th century into California. They come up with Captain De Anza. They move up out of northern Mexico into contemporary Arizona, into contemporary Southern California, and by 1775 are establishing the city of San Francisco. So without these women, these heroic women and their ability to endure frontier conditions, none of these settlements would have flourished.
Yeah, you talk about letting go all that you knew, your family and everything, and like you say, even for some, living a Cinderella lifestyle was, what you knew versus what you didn't know and the prospect. So, to let go of that is quite courageous.
Exactly. Now, the English Catholics who came into Maryland and southern Pennsylvania, the German Catholics who came into southern Pennsylvania later on in the early 18th century when there was a famine in the Rhineland, mm-hmm. They tended to come men, women, and children. You had families more or less but from the beginning, but not heavily female. It takes time for the female English population to come over. Now, if you look at the Protestant culture of New England, like the Mayflower and that whole group, they came in big numbers, men, women, and children. They established family life very quickly. And that, of course, results in a very high population, the population of the colonies that by 1775 allowed us to think about becoming independent from England.
Mm-hmm. And so, meanwhile, of course, a lot of misunderstanding, and I think, in the vernacular of the current media, false stories and false narratives going out. What was the truth of what was happening with Native Americans at that time as you had the influx of Europe into the Americas?
Well, I think the stronger and more coherent the Native American culture, the better the relationship was with the Europeans coming in. For instance, in Texas, the Apaches and the Comanches were very strong people, mm-hmm. and they negotiated. The Tejanos did as well. They negotiated with the Spaniards. Part of the problem out in California was the devastating effects of European diseases, mm-hmm. Measles, smallpox, yellow fever, syphilis on Native Americans. You had an absolute dysfunction, almost an anthropological disconnect there. Mm-hmm. So the patterns differ. I mean, the Native American civilizations, that was one of the pleasures of all the years of researching this book, is to each of these Native American cultures have their own coherence, their own strengths, their own weaknesses, their own points of view. And most of them had some sense of a unifying great spirit. Mm-hmm. Most of the cultures all across the continent. And that sense of the unifying great spirit provided a point of conversation between Europeans, Anglo-Catholics, French Catholics, Hispanic Catholics, and Native American people. This book of mine, Continental Ambitions, has a great drama of land and people, because meantime, the Europeans, the Spaniards, the French, the English coming here, fall in love with the American continent. Mm-hmm. And you imagine the first time you see the great rivers. Can you imagine the first time they see the St. Anthony's Falls or Niagara Falls, or the first time you see the great Pueblos of New Mexico, or the coastal regions of Southern California. And this, there's an environmental drama that goes on here. People get people are changed because they come from Europe, and at a certain point they shift over and become North American. Sometimes in one generation.
Wow.
They make a new allegiance, and you can see the evolution of a new psychology.
You talk about assimilation, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, amazing.
I certainly do, and I think if you read Continental Ambitions, you have a sense of how interactive the North American countries of Mexico, the United States, and Canada have always been with each other.
Mm-hmm. So would you say, I mean, the current narrative at times, convenient, depending on the agenda that is being driven, in terms of Native Americans, I mean, there's some things there to look at objectively, but sometimes it is overwritten and presented in such a way that it was all so mean-spirited that it was just, these white people coming over and taking over these lands. But as you say, obviously the Native Americans saw some benefit in associating with, whether it was the Roman Catholics, from Spain, France and others from England as well. So there had to be some, some cooperation there, wasn't there?
It certainly is, Bill, and there's the irony that the Hispanic connection that begins as the most troubled becomes the most triumphant.
Mm.
The French connection is the least troubled from the beginning, and remains the parallel tracks of Native American life and French life tend to remain side by side, friendly but distinctive. In the English situation, the Native Americans in Maryland, in effect, fade away into other territories, not because of war, but because of the population growth around the Chesapeake by European immigrants. But and I think that's a very important thing in thinking about our Hispanic identity in the United States of America today, that it came, by the time it came up into North America, it had wrestled its demons to the ground. It was not, especially the Franciscans really saw that their role was to establish, the Franciscans and the Jesuits, to establish protectorates up here, so that never again would the Native American be so grossly exploited as had happened in the Caribbean.
Exactly. Well, driven by, principles of virtue and kindness promoted by the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes, and by some great figures in the Roman Catholic Church, like Bartolomeo Las Casas, who was, and had she lived, I think Queen Isabella would have had much more influence on keeping a lid on violence in the early period. But you have to give great credit also to the lay people, the laity that become formed up. Suddenly, Spaniards have and people of indigenous background in their families, and suddenly you have great-grandchildren who represent an assimilation across three or four ethnic streams that come in. I think it's very successfully done by Hispanics. In the case of France, you have a small mixed population, and it's the Métis population. And in the case of New England and the Catholics of Maryland and Pennsylvania, you have direct coming over from England and later over from Germany. You have much more of European style life there.
Well,
dense native populations.
What a great study, and I appreciate so much you writing this, Dr. Starr. And for us, it is a true gift, and I highly recommend Continental Ambitions, Roman Catholics in North America, The Colonial Experience. Dr. Kevin Starr has been with us. Dr. Starr, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are stained from coffee,